Welcome everyone to the Girls in Movement podcast. We are officially on episode 17 today and brought to you from our London HQ. We have an immense guest on our show today. He's known to be a global property entrepreneur, the Doctor Who of business, so I'm told. He's an international speaker and spoken in over 70 countries. I think what I found most interesting is that my guest knowledge spans from Bitcoin to cybersecurity through to property and pretty much everything in between. He's the author of 5 books, and also I recently watched a 50 Cent interview, which was very amusing, and you definitely have to check that out. So without further ado, let me welcome Mr. Ben Chai to the show. Welcome, Ben.
Hey. Hello. Hi, everybody. Hi. Good to be here. Thank you for your invite for me, Polly.
He's got my double identity crossed there. So I think with your intro, Ben, I was trying to make it sound as cool as possible, and then I kept reading and reading more about you, and that was the shortest version I could do. So that's credit to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
So Ben, where are you based today?
Today I'm based in sunny Egham.
Lovely.
So Egham, for people, if you're not from the UK, is near Windsor or Heathrow Airport.
It's a lovely part of the world, it really is. And it's a lovely day as well in London, so it's always a plus, especially in February. So Ben, obviously, like all conversations, it's completely natural. I've never met Ben before. And everything you're about to hear is kind of the same conversation I'm about to have with Ben as well. So talk to me about your background, Ben, and the sort of journey to where you are now. You were born and raised in London, if I'm right.
Yes, in Hackney. And at the time, the UK was a pretty racist country compared to the very embracing place that London is today. And London is a very inclusive. But when I grew up, it wasn't like that. And I remember my first day at primary school, infant school, and I was 4 and a half, and I got beaten up by some guy in 12 in junior school. And I remember crying at home and saying, "Mum, what's Chinese?" Because I'm kind of mixed. So that was my first time at school. And you know, throughout my life until about 19, I've been more or less went through very severe bullying. Our parents at the time didn't know how to deal with it, and I come from a very proud family.
Yeah.
And for them to hear that that there's any problem in their family was like this is a disgrace. And so I remember telling my aunt about it and being severely punished by my parents when they found out that I tried to tell them. So that was my if you like my childhood. I wouldn't say it was all bleak. There were a lot of highlights in there. But yeah, it wasn't very good. And you know, I tried to commit suicide 2 or 3 times.
Wow.
This changed around the time I went to university, and from there, you know, I started repairing the damage to my self-image, and you know, really, really tried to find out who I was, and went on a whole set of spiritual journeys, if you like, until my mid-20s, when I started making a lot of decisions about my life. That's the short version, Polly.
So when you were making, I suppose, these decisions, in the sense of, I suppose, your business life, when did it start? I mean, did you start off in an initial role, or did you kickstart, I suppose, your career with founding a company? How did the business side of your life start out?
Oh, yeah, no, I started a company at the age of 6, and in 2 years I was a billionaire.
I knew it.
I'm sorry, it's the way it's described in these startup days, and it really shocks me actually to see people actually even believing these stories from other people.
Yeah, I agree.
The truth is, I was not destined to be anything according to my family, and I just about scraped a degree from university. You know, I probably should have been thrown out, but I was very lucky that the strength of my previous learning allowed me to get that degree. But I you know, my friends were being thrown out.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated, my dad said, you know, I've got you a job in the government. And by then he'd moved to Singapore. And, you know, we think you'll be safe there. We don't think he'll amount to anything. And I, you know, bless him, he was actually trying to help me, but in my head I thought this is the most disrespectful thing I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And declined his kind offer and returned back to UK, where I slept on a friend's floor with five or six other people and had porridge for lunch and cereal, cornflakes for dinner. So I didn't have much. I managed to get a small job as an administrator, earning about £5,000 or £6,000 a year. And because I couldn't really afford much, I was cycling 10 miles to work and 10 miles back.
Wow.
So that's the start. Now, somewhere along the way, I just thought, this is rubbish. You know, I'd like to go on a date, or I'd like to afford to have somewhere to live. And so I started educating myself until 3 or 4 in the morning with some of the technical components within the company. So it was a small IT company, and I started learning their software. And the reason for that was actually I'd got very angry with the engineers, because in the 80s, knowledge was power. And so people would covet knowledge, and if they knew that they had the knowledge, they would hide it away from you. It was like on a need to know basis. And I was trying to help some people, and the engineers would go, "Oh, Ben, sorry, can't tell you that. That's on a need to know basis." And it was very simple things like connecting cables. So I just vowed that I would make public knowledge every single piece of knowledge that I ever got.
Yeah.
And of course, the 2000 movement with the internet did exactly that thing. And today, people who hide knowledge are considered blockers and they wouldn't get promotions, whereas people like myself, who give away knowledge freely and happily to others, are promoted because we're considered to be enablers.
So
that was quite a change. But I started in a little job, and I was really trying to find my way, if you like. And it was reading, I know this sounds weird, but at university I became a Christian, and I read the Bible about 8 or 9 times cover to cover. And that book is really difficult to read. Like I don't believe, no wonder nobody understands it. Now, in that book there's a lot of really great gems and jewels on how to be really fantastic in business, how to connect with people. So I grew there, and then from there I started learning from people like Brian Tracy and a guy who's passed away. His name is Wayne Dyer. So Brian Tracy teaches me a lot about business, and people like Wayne Dyer would teach me a lot about the spiritual aspects. And Wayne Dyer is a very amazing guy, because he'd taken every single religion, pre-Christ and post-Christ. So he'd read the Torah, he'd read the Quran, not the Quran, is that the book? The Quran, he'd read the Bible, he'd read all the Hindu texts. He'd read a lot about religions before Christ. And what he did is he got all of that information and found all the things that were similar between every single religion, and that's what he used to share to people. And that itself helped me a lot. So it was just, so that helped me repair my mind and my self-image. And stuff like Brian Tracy and Earl Nightingale helped me understand business and how to increase my income. So that's where it all started. I'd love to say, you know, it was at six and I made a million in my first 2 years, but it wasn't like that. It was, you know, it took me about 10-12 years to make my first fortune.
And talk to us about your first fortune, Ben. Was that within the kind of property industry, or was that still within IT or elsewhere?
Okay, so it was a combination, and I was thinking, how can I be retired by 35? That was the goal. So when you think like this, you think, okay, if I'm retired at 35, how am I going to get an income? And so I thought, well, here are the different ways that you can get income while you're not working. One of them is to write books and get royalty. Another one is to get royalty from music,
yeah,
or write films. Another one is to be an actor and get repeat income every time you're in a film. So I've been in a number of BBC programs, and every time it was broadcast, I would get a check that would just come through the door.
Great.
With my writing, every time one of my educational manuals was used, the company would give me a check. So, you know, that was passive income. And property the same. Every time you get some rental income, you get some passive income. So I looked at some of these. I wasn't good at all of them.
Yeah.
I wasn't really that good at network marketing, because I ended up doing all the sales for the people in the team.
Sure.
And that's not how network marketing is supposed to be. So I wasn't very good at that. The pension, which promised to make me a million by that age, well, actually, the interest rates went down very badly from 18 and 19% to about 1 or 2%. So that wasn't very good. But the work I did with the businesses and the passive income from, I didn't have many properties in those days. I had about just a few. But I had income from them, and I had income from my writing.
Yeah.
In which I've made over a million in writing, and combined with my work, my teaching and education, and my income from some of the businesses. So that's what did it. It was a combination. I'd like to say it was just property. Property didn't really, my property income didn't really reach my income from my stage speaking until 3 or 4 years ago.
Wow. I mean, that's really nice as well. I mean, that modern day sort of idea that you don't necessarily need one profession to, I suppose, go towards your pension pot. And that's what individuals from kind of this generation, they obviously have a day job, but they're also doing numerous other things that they're interested in, or avenues that can make them money, which is great. And obviously you're onto that sort of kind of different avenues for one individual. You're on that from the start, which is pretty amazing. I mean, moving away from business, we spoke briefly before the call about the work you're doing with women, so kind of women who have been abused, and educating them and empowering them, I suppose. So how did that start in terms of the work that you're doing, say, for example, for women in Albania?
That started purely by accident. And this is really interesting how the universe works. So remember I said that I educate a lot of people, and you mentioned 70 countries and so on, but I also run a lot of workshops, and I used to have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people in the workshop. And it would be amazing how people would sit next to each other and they would be the right people.
Yeah.
So, for example, people, I remember two people who sat next to each other. Apparently they went to school, the same school, one was a year above the other, but they didn't know that when they sat next to each other. That's the thing. And I think the universe works like this. And so what happened was there were two ladies, a lady called Mirella Sula and another one called Marina Nani. They have nothing to do with each other, but I was at an author's event, which was run by Marina, and Mirella was there. She saw me. I didn't actually open my mouth at all. I was just quiet. I was part of the people sitting around listening and watching people talk.
Yeah.
And she came up to me and said, "Oh, I need someone to greet people at my women's event." And I said, "Oh, that's interesting. Why do you want a man to do that?" She said, "Well, because I've got all women, I'd like the men to greet women, and you look suitable." And I think she was just being cheeky, to be honest with you. So I said, "Yeah, sure." She didn't know anything about me. She didn't know who I was. And I said, "How many men would you like?" She said, "Oh, I'd like four." I said, "Oh, I'll bring some friends." And so I met this lady. Now, her business is in empowering women. And so I helped out that day, and that went fine. And then she asked if I'd like to help at another event. So I said, "Yeah, sure. How many men would you need that time?" She said, "I only need one." And at that time, she'd forgotten to get an audiovisual person, or she had tried to, but there wasn't one. And she phoned around, but there was nobody there. And she had one of the most well-known speakers in the entrepreneurial world there, so she didn't want to let him down. And I said, "Well, you know, I could do that." And she said, "No, you couldn't. You just greet people. That's all you know what to do." And I said, "Well, I used to be in a radio broadcasting for 20 years, so I understand the mixing desk. It's fine." And then the speaker said, "Oh, I need some music." And then she's running around. And I said, "Well, you know, I've got a lot of music." She said, "Why would you have a lot of music?" I said, "Because I used to be a broadcaster, so it's on my laptop." So just plug that in. I saw her at another event again, and this time a speaker had not turned up or was delayed in the airport, and so she was panicking. And I said, I can speak on your." She said, why would you able to do that? You just know how to do sound." And I said, "Well, I've spoken in so many countries on stage." So she saw me there, and it was just very funny. They had a technical problem in Dubai with their laptops. And I said, "You know, I was one of the first Microsoft engineers. I can fix those." And she said, "Is there anything you don't do?" It was just very fun. Anyway, they took me to Albania, where Mirella is from. And that's how I saw what was going on there. I also was spoke in South Africa. And when I did my research, because I like to research people before I get on their stages, I found that 72%, and this is something you can Google, 72% of the women in Albania are abused. And that statistic goes higher in South Africa, where it is up to 90%.
Wow.
So that's, and I thought, this is rubbish, you know. I'm someone who likes to have my eyes closed. I don't like to see some of the stuff that goes on in the world, because then I feel I need to do something about it.
Yeah, of course.
So there, my eyes were opened, and I felt I needed to do something about it. And so I wrote an article on how women can move from being abused to having their own business. And in that article, I talked about Maslow's hierarchy. And right at the bottom of the hierarchy, you know, the need for security is paramount before you can even have a business.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I suggested some ideas that women can have to move from that abused environment. But of course, it goes much deeper. And when I, the more I do on women who are abused, there's a lot more from just moving them away from the abuse, because their confidence will be impacted.
Yeah, completely.
Physically, or confident, or in confidence mentally or intellectually. And so I needed to, I found that the articles that I wanted to write, I couldn't write, because I needed to help people understand where they're being abused and help them regain their confidence.
Yeah.
Whereas the original articles I planned was, you know, how to learn English, how to get their business online, how to, you know, those kinds of articles, but I had to take them from, I had to get them in a place where they could learn those things. So that's why the articles that I've currently been planned and accepted by some magazines in Albania is, you know, how to defend yourself physically, how to recognize intellectual abuse, and how to recognize emotional abuse. And then another article, of course, is, here's the thing, here's the worst thing that we have in society, is that it's, you can say it's not really the men's fault or the women's fault, because the men there are used to seeing their grandfather and their father abuse the women, so they think that's natural. And the women who are being abused think it's natural and part of love as well, so they don't think they're being abused.
And it's that education, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. So that's why I said the more I looked into it. And it's no different from my being bullied, yeah. right back from the start of this interview, where I had to fix myself before I could really make the income that I did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that journey.
From the stories within Albania, I mean, I'm sure are you quite hands-on with the women there, or are you writing the articles, or do you get involved? I mean, have you seen some inspiring stories come through?
A few, and you know, some of the women who are helping me to write it, so I write it in English, they print it in English, but they also have an Albanian component which they translate, and they said so they sent me how helpful it is to the women in their society. And I'm hoping what it will do is help them to find someone to teach them self-defense and so on. I do have a little bit of a commitment there, and will be back in June, and I've been thinking how I can set up workshops, but really I want those workshops to be run by women, not someone like myself, because I guess they would view me as being very privileged. They're not really understanding what they've gone through.
I don't know. I mean, I disagree there. I think someone showing that they can help them and build their confidence. I mean, what you were saying before about how you can't just kind of say, okay, this is how you build a business online. They're not at that stage yet of having the confidence to do that. So for you to take a step back and say, okay, I actually need to build their confidence internally. I think whether that's a man or a woman, I think someone just giving them that time and attention is what they need, and to be able to say to them, you can actually come out of this. And I think with a lot of women, kind of the articles that I've read is that, as you were saying, they don't think that anything that's happening is actually wrong. So you need to go a whole another step back and sort of say, actually, the abuse that you've had over the past few years is actually, that's not right. And changing their mindset on that is quite a big challenge. And then for them to say, actually, you can be this empowering female figure is another step, which they probably can't even see as something that they can achieve. I disagree. I think it can be a male, female person. But I think the actual education that you're giving them is the most important part of it, definitely.
Yes, and I take on board what you're saying. I guess my concern is that when this has happened to me in my education, in my workshops, that people almost get addicted to me as that person, and then you have these kind of attachments, which I'm trying to avoid by having a lady doing that kind of education.
Yeah.
I remember dating a teacher in, she's from Northampton, which is not a part of the UK. And she's a teacher, and she was studying psychology. And she was actually abused and hospitalized by her husband.
Wow.
And I asked her this question. I said, why, what made you get divorced? And she said, well, they had a son, and she didn't want her son to be hospitalized. That's why she got divorced. I said, so let me understand this. If you'd never had that son, would you have stayed with your husband? And she said, of course.
Wow.
I said, but you're also intelligent. Why would you have stayed with him? And she said, well, you have to understand then that while I was with him, and a neighbor had reported it, and she had to go to court, and she protected her husband. She said, over time, you believe that that is love.
This
concept that isn't just in Albania and South Africa, it's even in our country, that, that when you're constantly abused, you think, that's my life. And you know, since then, she's gone on to do very well. She's married a doctor and so on. But her thing to me was, she said, I would never have understood what real connection is until I met you. And so I guess, you know, my concern is just that, yes, I could run them. And I was thinking, how can I get it funded? And then I realized the government would probably fund me to set up a whole set of workshops. But for me, I'd rather do that through some ladies, perhaps like yourself, Polly.
Yeah, I would love to do so.
Yes, so that's where I'm at, and that going back and actually creating my own physical workshops for them. But it is on the cards.
It's very exciting. I think it's a huge opportunity as well for individuals in Albania, female individuals, to build their confidence up, build a business, I think it's a great thing that you're doing, really. Moving on to, so my question, next question is around mentors. So I feel like you yourself, I feel like you, say that again, Ben.
Did you say mumpreneurs?
No, mentors.
Oh, mentors. Sorry, okay. I think you said mumpreneurs.
So in your life, would you say, who do you think have been some key mentors for you that stand out? Because I have a feeling that you're probably a mentor to a lot of different people, whether that's people when you're doing kind of global speaking or a workshop or within a business. For you, who would you say is a standout mentor?
Well, I would say Wayne Dyer. I actually met him once in Scotland.
Wow.
But you know, it was just through his audio and his books that I read. I found that very, very helpful. In terms of actual people, I was bullied a lot by my peer group, and I didn't spend much time with them as a result. So I spent a lot of time with the senior people who were like 50, 60, 70, 80.
Right.
Like my grandmother and my godmother, who, and my great aunt and great uncle. And they would tell me a lot of things. So the challenges I had in my 20s were very different from people who didn't have the older generation, who kind of said, well, they went through this, they would tell me stories of their lives, and you know, I'd take on board those stories and the lessons from those stories. And so I never went through some of the challenges that we have in our 20s. As a result of that, my great uncle, my great aunt, Uncle Vi and Uncle Tim, my godmother, and they're all passed away, by the way. But I would say they mentored and coached me. In the dance world, because I performed in dance. Again, all the lovely old ladies who couldn't get a dance partner, so I was there. The victim. They would also coach and mentor me on a bunch of things. So that was fun.
Such a charmer, Ben.
I do have a lot of love and respect for all these people who helped me. And funny enough, you know, my first few properties that I bought were from senior people. They'd actually passed away.
Wow.
My neighbor, she passed away, and she asked her, she used to talk a lot about me to her children and to her grandchildren. And her grandchildren knocked on my door. Now, just to give you an idea, her grandchildren were about 35, 40.
Right.
And they knocked on my door and said, would I like to buy the property? You know, in those days, I was told by my parents that I shouldn't buy the property because it's a bad thing. And so that's what my reply was. And they said, well, you know, we want to bless you back because you looked after our grandmother. You mowed her lawns, you went around for coffees and teas and did lots of DIY stuff for her. The property is worth about 100,000. You can have it for about, you know, 64,000.
Right.
And so it was massive, massive. And I thought, well, this sounds like a good deal. So yeah. I asked my brother to take the mortgage for me because there was no such thing as buy-to-let mortgages at the time. And we were only allowed one mortgage and just had a solicitor's agreement that the property was mine, that I was paying the mortgage and everything for it. So that's how I got started. And as I said, those senior people, though they mentored and coached me a lot.
Yeah, I suppose they've affected those sort of pivotal points in your life as well, like kind of getting into property, which sounds like it just happened by chance, really, which is it's amazing. It's
well, it did. It did, and same with the whole Albanian thing. It did. I don't want to say it happened by chance because obviously, you know, you put yourself in the road, and it's up to you to take the opportunity or not.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't have to buy the ticket to Albania. You know, I didn't have to pay for my. So if I, because I bought that ticket to Albania, because I paid for my hotel in Albania, this opportunity arrived.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason.
Yes, it does, including my being bullied.
So you do a lot of talks and kind of events. What exciting talks and events do you have coming up in 2018, Ben?
Oh, in 2018, well, I'll tell you what's happening in March. So 3rd of March, I'm giving a TED talk.
Great.
On social magnetism, which is a book that my son helped me write last year.
Lovely.
Potentially tomorrow, I've got a talk. A lot of my talks happen by accident. People say, oh, you're Ben Chai. Would you mind giving 10 or 15 minutes, or would you MC for us? So yesterday I was MCing at a property event, and that happened by accident. On the I'm in Amsterdam giving a talk on Tuesday the 13th, and there's an author's award which I'll be giving a talk in
great
at the end of March. There's the Global Woman, they're doing a conference on what's wrong with men.
Oh, wow.
I think I didn't even want to get involved in that debate.
We could be there all day.
It's clickbait to get people to think, I'll have a look at that. So those are some of the immediate talks I'll be giving.
Great, that's exciting. I mean, for anyone listening as well, we can put all the details of Ben's sort of events and talks which are coming up. So Ben, just on a final question, I always ask my guests this. If you could give your younger self any advice, what would it be?
Carry on.
Okay.
Yes, you have to understand that every terrible thing or something that seems very terrible to you, in your lifespan, if you're going to live the length that we have today, which is just above 90, that every event in your life is just a small blip in your lifespan.
Completely.
So you might go through something for a year or two, and it might be horrible. You might be very depressed, but you know, if you're living 90 years, what's 2 years out of 90?
Yeah.
Or 2 years out of 80? Or 2 years out of 70? It's, you know, very, very small. It's less than, substantially less than 10%. So as long as you're moving forward, then everything will be all right. Eventually.
Eventually, it will all be all right.
I would love to say, I'd change this and this in your life, in my life, but then I wouldn't have gone through those lessons.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be as effective as a mentor and coach and as a person as I am today. So if I fix everything, and this is by the way something, Polly, that I love. I find that everybody who is imperfect is perfect, and everyone who considers themselves and tells people they're perfect is actually imperfect.
I understand completely what you mean there as well.
Yes. So carry on. Get lessons from people. Go and listen to audio stuff to help educate you and move you forward. Grow your internal self, which I was doing anyway. So I guess perhaps one day I'll change the advice. But
no, I think it's great.
Be more courageous when you're asking women out. That's probably what I thought.
It's great advice, and I think when you're younger as well, I mean, you think, God, you think when you have one bad day, it's the end of the world. So yeah, having that mentality of just carrying on is so important. And definitely to kind of double up on your point of you've got to constantly be educating yourself and moving forward. That is also really important. So yeah, thank you so much, Ben. It's been a really good conversation, and there's definitely a lot of links and articles that I think our guests would want to kind of find out more about, which I'll obviously put at the bottom of this YouTube video. And of course, if you'd like to download on iTunes, we're officially live on there, so you can of course listen to this as a podcast. And thank you so much, Ben.
Yes, and thank you for having me, Polly.
Thank you. No problem. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Tune in for the next show. Thank you. I'm not afraid to